Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Damien and Dio on YouTube as well as Anchor.fm. Today is Wednesday, so Dio and me are going to be talking about wrestling for the week so far, because Wednesday is going to be the wrestling day. I don't know how we just put that together, but Wednesday is the wrestling day because Dark Side of the Ring was last night. And as always, find us on Instagram and on Twitter. I'm at DamonG347. Dio is at I'm Just D-E-O. The Damon G Show on Anchor.fm is also on Instagram by the same name. Human interest, personal development, psychology, and sports psychology. But I digress. Dark Side of the Ring. I have dubbed this episode Cocaine and Hookers. And my friend, we got a lot of that within the first 20 minutes of the episode.
Fuck.
So a little backstory for people. This episode was about Herb Abrams, who
may or may not be alive.
Yeah, thank you. Who may have faked his own death to escape tax evasion. I mean, if he jumped out of a window to escape a biker gang, I wouldn't be surprised if he faked his own death. Mm-hmm. But he is, by all accounts, a super fan from New York that wanted to start his own promotion, a wrestling promotion. In many ways, he could have been looked as the early part of Paulie Dangerously of ECW before he became the advocate, Mr. Paul Heyman. So Herb Abrams started the UWF, and he started doing something that TNA did. He did before what TNA did a couple years ago, which is signing all the talent that used to work for WWF at the time.
Right.
And bring them in. And you said something you said off air, Dio, where it gave the impression that this might be loosely associated with WWF to get viewership. Yeah. Because you have people like B. Brian Blair, who I was freaking out because I've always thought he was the better Killer B, in my opinion, from the old WWF Killer B tag team, who had the coldest line of the show, which we'll get to later on. But overall, Herb decided to run this promotion, and by all accounts started to do pretty well out of Reseda, California, home of PWG, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, which I have never been to a show before, and I don't foresee myself ever going to Reseda show.
I would never want to go there. Like, it looks hot, and not in a good way.
It looks hot and sweaty.
And pro wrestling fans are notoriously stinky.
So. Even before the quarantine. But they interviewed over the course of the show. They talked to a myriad of wrestlers. Mick Foley makes an appearance within the first 45 seconds to a minute, which surprised me. B. Brian Blair, aforementioned, as well as Steve Wild Thing Ray, who we both agree at the end of this documentary with the crocodile tears.
Oh, that was a fucking Oscar-winning performance there, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I clapped, I applauded, I almost got out of my seat. It was something else. But Herb had a propensity for the booger sugar, as they say. And the ladies of the night, as we will call it. Mm-hmm. And as we go on, we're realizing the way he's running things, because he's kind of shooting too high for the stars here, trying to compete with Vince McMahon instead of just saying, let me just build myself up. Let me get my little promotion off the ground. AEW should be paying attention to what happened in yesterday's show, just saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all in all, and we'll break it down a little bit more, what were your first impressions of last night's Dark Side of the Ring?
Like, so this is probably the most lighthearted out of all of them, even though he died.
Allegedly?
Because it's... The thing is, there were at least six or seven different rumors. Basically every wrestler or person involved with the company had a different story about how the dude died, right? Mm-hmm. What they heard. And then... old dude that was the colonel was like, yeah, like, how was running a UWF promotion down in South, in whichever one of the Carolinas? And one of the dudes that was running the show for me that night said that some short dude with red cowboy boots, which was old dude's signature, came up to him and like read him a riot act about how he was going to sue and this, that, and the other, and blah, 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 blah. So it was like, huh, this is getting to be a little bit in that territory of like, is this this actually sounds like it could be feasible that the dude didn't die. You know, if he did die, you know, hey, sad, but kind of dug your own grave when it came to that shit.
Well, literally, but, that's what B. Brian Blair said. He went out the way he wanted to, cocaine and hookers. So
yeah. Like, it was, this one was an interesting one because it's like a cautionary tale of what to do and what not to do.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and not just what to do and what not to do as a person, but like as a promoter. As this very much, it's kind of interesting how like this very much echoed what happened in the early days of AEW.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How.
Sorry, I don't know that. But I do
know. Oh, be quiet.
Was that Alexa saying she doesn't know what AEW is?
Oh, that's because I said the word ECHO. Yeah, that's why.
Got it.
But yeah, so like the same thing that happened in AEW in the beginning stages, like how it would be like there wouldn't be that big of a crowd, you know, like they were having to like use camera trickery to show right, that there was a big that crowd. Was so, mm-hmm. Same thing that they were doing here. So like this very much. Like it was almost like early AEW because it was very, you know, poaching a lot of the talent from the big company, giving people chances that didn't, you know, have chances otherwise and stuff. So, yeah, it was interesting. But was it that they said that his reach was farther than his actual grasp? And I was like, yeah. I like that. That was very, very apt. In this because it was, that's what it was. Like he had high hopes, you know, as the song said, you know, high hopes. So yeah, like this, it was interesting. It was interesting. A whole lot of cocaine though.
I mean,
like it, what the hell? So much cocaine. Like the cocaine was everywhere, bro.
But here's the thing. This season, you and I have talked about it. There has been, maybe again, as a kid, we don't know this part. But as we all, as adults now, bruh, the amount of cocaine all over professional wrestling in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Like, it's one of them things where it's just like, what? How is all of this? Bro, what the how did y'all survive is one thing. Like that's like did the drugs pickle your bodies to like make you last longer? I don't understand because like y'all should be dead. Like y'all should be long gone from this earth. But then again, there's Keith Richards.
Keith Richards is still alive.
Richards is allegedly 87,000 years old.
He might be a vampire. We're not sure about
that. He might be a vampire. Like if you cut him, I'm pretty sure air and dust would come out. Like I have never, like, he looks like beef jerky. Like, he looks like he has been completely dehydrated. Like, you know how, like, when they have, like, the mummy exhibit?
Yes.
Which, in and of themselves, problematic. Send the fucking bodies back. That's probably why we're in the situations that we're in now.
Curses.
Yeah, but, like, how they just look dried and withered because they're just dry. But that's Keith Richards. Like, that man is... Yeah, bro. I don't even fucking know.
Well, okay. So as we're continuing the episode and just seeing what Herb is doing, it's admirable that a fan, and we've seen this, you know, in the independent promotions, even before AEW, before Impact, with independent promotions where they are fans first.
Right.
And then they want to, I know a couple off the top of my head that are trying to outshoot their reach,
right.
Outreach their grasp, or whatever the case may be, and they fall spectacularly short because the boys and girls backstage just want to get paid.
Right.
They want to do their craft. They want to get paid because they're independent contractors. They don't really give two shits if you make money as long as they make money.
Right.
And back in the 80s and 90s, that kind of was the big thing is just, okay, just pay me, man. I don't really care. If we remember back in the original Raimi Spider-Man where Spider-Man doesn't help, you know, stop the robber.
Right.
Just wants to get paid.
Right.
I missed the part where that's my problem, right. That the gate was short. And I'm sure plenty of independent wrestlers I know will tell me that promoters have tried to go backstage and say, hey, the take was a little light. I can't pay you. Man, listen.
Nah, bro. We fighting.
And then we find out as the episode goes on, my man wasn't short. He just had money in other accounts.
Right. That man was still loaded.
Yes. In his nose.
Yeah.
And in his bank account.
And in his bank account. Like, which the business that he had outside of wrestling was smart. You know, it provided to a marginalized group of people. So he made a ton of money doing that. But yeah, like it was. This was just bad.
off topic really quick, you mentioned, having jobs outside of what you're trying to do in terms of him and wrestling. Mm-hmm. I was watching a video summation of 90 Day Fiancé. And there was this dude with the Ukrainian bride he bought over, and he had like a legalized marijuana distributor business. Mm-hmm. And this is what I think about when I think about pro wrestling, because in my work in nonprofit, I can tell you that there's donations that come in from people that, you know, this money did not come through conventional means. Not come through legal means.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Like the dude that has no kind of, like, you know, always short on money, but all of a sudden got like $4,500. I'm like, how'd you get that, sir?
How'd you manifest that? When the universe that just said, here you go, law of attraction, you must have did something to get that. Mm-hmm. You didn't have OnlyFans back then, but but those are the things I think about in terms of fans or people with money who want to get involved with professional wrestling. We've seen tons of independent promotions, you know, they have tried that, they have come and gone. Again, many pop into my head right now, and I'm not going to say them on air. But I know Dio, a few of them that they've come and they've gone. And all because they want to be part of life.
Yeah.
Living that life, because cocaine and hookers and cowboy boots, apparently.
Yeah, red cowboy boots and yellow cowboy boots.
Ostrich skin.
Ostrich skin color boy boots. Yeah, he's really going to get it with that one. Yeah.
So my man literally thought he would be the attraction, not the people on the card. Right. The fact that he made himself an on-air character that they were going to remark about his boots at the MGM.
Right. Like that was, so one of the lines in the beginning of the thing was that they said, you know, pro wrestling fans tend to have this deep desire to be on the inside of the show. And he is the perfect example of that. Like, yeah. He is the mark that infiltrated that, right? Mm-hmm. But very quickly realized, like, the matches were bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, didn't know how to book things properly.
Oh, those botches we were seeing in midway through the episode? My God.
Like, that is, even if you take two wrestlers that have never work together before, nowadays you're still gonna get something better than that. Yeah. Because I can't blame him entirely for those. Like, I gotta blame the performers for a lot of that too, because it's just like, what the fuck were y'all doing?
I bet you they were partying with her backstage, probably.
Absolutely. So yeah, like, it's with all this, yeah, it was it's so many things that happened in this damn episode where it was, yes, just like, what the fuck. Like, it was one of the things that really bothered me was the whole Andre the Giant thing. Was like, you could see he was in pain when he walked, because this is pretty close to when he passed.
Yeah.
So like, you could see, like, when they brought him out to do his little promo, and you could see him walking. It was just like, he's in pain.
So go rest, man. Go rest.
Just go rest, you know, because this, your body cannot hold up to this anymore. And then, you know, like, the announcers were like talking about, oh, he's past his prime. I'm like, what the fuck? What? What do you, why would you even say that he's past his prime? What the fuck? Isn't he supposed to be like one of your star attractions?
Right, like, you literally are bringing this man in to be a star attraction, and you're on air saying, well, he's past his prime. What?
What? Y'all smoking dust. Well, no, you were literally just cocaine, actually. Yeah, like it was just, it was, everything about it was weird. Like how he, you could tell when he was high, when he wasn't as well in his promos. Like the one night where he was just like, he was like gyrating. I was like, what?
I thought he was convulsing like he was going to die. Literally, right, as if he was like, going to die.
He looked like he was. Yeah, it was bad. It was so much of it was bad. But then, like, the paranoia that he had, the
worse than Mustafa smoking pencil shavings, according to Eugene in the chat.
Yeah, because, like, that was, like, Mustafa could still perform, though. But this dude was just, like, he was, you could, and the thing is, you could see when he was interacting with the other, with the performers, they were like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, hi, bro, you good?
Like, right, like, you, they're, you know, they, you, there's a thing that happens when you know someone's high, and like not weed high, but like cocaine high is a very specific, like people act a very specific way when they're on coke. And like there's a good amount of people we know, like when you've seen somebody with a good, like, hey, you good, bro? Like we need to call the ambulance because, you know, you look looking kind of rough over here, bro. Looking kind of rough. But yeah, this was fucking weird, bro.
Well, yeah, okay. So let's walk through some of the really random shit, okay? The first thing is, obviously the title is Cocaine and Hookers. But here's something that fell under the radar for me. Mm-hmm. When the dude is talking about the dude that came to work, I don't know if he was like a stunt coordinator or a producer type, not his best friend, the dude with curly hair. I forget what his name is, but the guy whose room that the first story is happening.
The dude that was the colonel.
Yeah, the colonel dude. Yeah, and he's talking about, these aren't the South Carolina snaggletooth hookers, which that line had me rolling. Yeah. And then I thought, you know, of my old past, and I'm like, yo, have I ever dated a girl with a snaggletooth? Like,
I have.
I don't think I have, but yeah. I had to relook up what a snaggletooth was.
We'll use the pro wrestling terms. I'm a body guy when it comes to my former partners. So
I looked up South Carolina snaggletooths and I saw Google's a hell of a thing, bro.
He's probably talking about like meth mouth is what he's talking about.
Probably, yes.
That's a whole different thing.
So when he's talking about the situation with our boy Herb and the two ladies of the night, he talks about it as if he was being cucked in the corner,
right? Like that whole thing, I was like, okay, sir, no, you could have left the room, you could have left the room, but no, you decided to chill in the corner and watch. And you're like, yeah, it was like a live
pornographic movie.
Like, oh, so you enjoy this?
Yes, you want to watch this.
Definitely wants to watch this. Like, I'm sorry, I don't want to be in the room when somebody else is fucking. I just don't.
I'm gonna leave.
I'm saying, like, I will go walk around the block if I got to. He's like, and he was like, and it was a long night. I was like, I bet it was for you too.
It was because you were there watching the whole freaking time.
Carpal tunnel syndrome.
Or maybe he was participating and didn't want to tell people he was participating. Trying to keep the lie alive.
He looks like the type to watch. He looked like
Isaac Yankum DDS.
Yeah, but out of shape.
Yes, or the dude from the Heavenly Bodies, Tom Pritchard meets Jimmy Del Rey combined. He just looked the part. But yeah. We had that, and then we had the moment of Herb again with Ladies of the Night and Cocaine in a Bathrobe, having bikers apparently barge into his room to collect some money he owed them. Mm-hmm. And my man, whoever the actor is portraying him in the scenes, was great. That guy must have been having a blast playing this role because they show him literally jumping out of a window with his bathrobe on, with a censorship bar,
pixelated genitals, yeah,
over his meat sack. And my man, like, really?
Right.
Really? Yeah. This is a thing you're doing right now. You can't make this up. You ran from bikers by jumping out of a... How many times we've seen people on do videos like this on YouTube or Instagram where my man got caught cheating or the girl got caught cheating and the man comes home and they try to skedaddle? My man Herb did this in a hotel window. So how far were you up above the ground, bro, where you didn't get hurt?
It don't make any fucking sense.
None of it made sense.
I mean, then again, cocaine gives you superpowers, bro.
It's a hell of a drug, according to Rick James.
Yeah, but like, we've seen crackheads, right?
Yes.
We've seen what crackheads can do. Crackheads are actual super soldiers. Like, it is. I have seen crackheads do things that do not make sense physically. Like, there is no reason that this 125-pound person should be able to lift close to 300 pounds.
Right.
Like it's nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, I have seen crackheads run through barbed wire and just climb over barbed wire fences like it was nothing, with at high rates of speed at that, just getting cut the fuck up and just keep moving like nothing happened. I'm just like, what is what? And since it's the same substance, cocaine gives you similar shit. Like, you know, like, that's one of the reasons why people did coke in the like 80s so damn much, was because, like, kept you super alert, you know, put some pep in your step, as you
like, said. To hell with caffeine, give me the cocaine.
The cocaine will keep you going, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, this one was like, but seeing, you know, him, it's like, oh yeah, he was on coke. Yeah, that makes sense that he jumped out a window.
Mm-hmm. And lived to tell about it.
And lived to tell about it, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and as the story progresses, we meet his boy Lenny, who winds up being the GM, you know, of UWF.
Right.
And I feel like he's the most wholesome
person
that worked for this organization, because my man cried at the end.
Yeah,
lamenting his death.
Yeah, and like, he was like legit sad. Like, that wasn't like a put on.
Like our boy Stevie Ray at the end.
Yeah, like, he, this was very much like that came from a. It felt like it came from a very genuine place. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, he was, and you could tell, like, he was a dude that was not part of this business. He was from the outside of it. He wasn't a fan. Like, he just came in to this due to his skill set that he had. And, you know, I felt bad for him. I honestly felt bad for him, because, like, when people brought up the whole thing of, you know, his death possibly being faked, like, he was like, he was like sobbing. Like, I feel like he would have, you know, reached out, gave me some type of a message. And I was like, yeah, you don't know drug addicts then.
Yeah, because if he wanted to reach out to, he would have, bro. If he was still alive.
Yeah, yeah. But then at the same time, like, everything that we saw about him in this, maybe he wouldn't have reached out. Like, he seems like the type that would absolutely go to another country, reinvent himself under a different alias, and never talk to anybody in America again. You know?
Like, really, Carol Baskin's husband went to Costa Rica?
I actually do kind of... That's a possibility for me, actually, that he went.
Okay, how much of a possibility do you give that Carol Baskin did not actually feed her husband to the tiger?
I'd say there's like a 10% chance.
Okay, that's 10, more than I would have thought.
10, maybe a 20% chance, because, like, all the other people that, like, talked to him and were like, you know, yes, we're on a tangent here. How he was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm, you know, if I could do this to him, if I could pull this off, you know, like, if the fact that he said that to someone is, you know, that does,
but you add a little bit of
gravity to it. But at the same time, that was a thing that did happen a lot. You know, people will be, you know, completely will just disappear, and then they've been living in Honduras for like 27 years. They have a family and 57 grandchildren.
It's like the Shawshank Redemption at the end.
Right.
Would you ever fake your own death?
No.
I've thought about it.
No. I like it, it's for me, like, the connections that I hold with people are too important to me that I couldn't do it. I could not do that and just, like, you know, disappear on them, because especially the people that I know I'm important to, I couldn't do that to them. So I'd much rather just be like, oh yeah, no, I'm just gonna go skip to another country. I'm still alive. Y'all know that I'm still here. Mm-hmm. You know, government kiss my ass, whatever. But yeah.
So let me preface for the audience, if they're just tuning in to Damien and Dio, I just want to let them know, I'm not saying I'm going to fake my own death. I'm not saying I'm even thinking about it currently. But back in the day when the boy wasn't feeling his best mentally, back when he was younger, and thought about, you know, offing himself, I thought about maybe trying to fake my own death just to see and approve. F you. Nah, you're going to cry now. Don't cry now that I'm gone type stuff. Like,
oh, like Kim Jong-un?
Yeah. Allegedly.
Well, but apparently he did that
to see who the detractors were, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is like, that is some movie shit. But then again, he fucking fed somebody to dogs. So what can you say?
Look, it's like in wrestling when the boss man fed Al Snow his dog. Like,
oh boy.
It all comes back around in wrestling at some point.
Bro, the Attitude Era was trash. I keep trying to fucking tell y'all. I will keep telling y'all this. I will keep on telling you. Listen to me. Listen.
The voice of God has now spoken.
The Attitude Era is the worst era of pro wrestling.
Why, Dio?
Because it's trash.
Why is it trash?
Because of everything. It had amazing moments, but they weren't sustained moments.
I just want to just let the audience know really quick. Just, he grabbed the mic with purpose. Fuck to you. Let y'all know that the WWF Attitude Era, aside from moments, was trash.
And like, and that's the thing. Like, I grew up in with the Attitude Era. Like, the Attitude Era was during my, like, formative years as a young adult. So, like, that was just like, what? That was the best thing on earth. As I've gotten older, as I've been able to go back, because hindsight is 2020, and look back at things, the Attitude Era was trash. It was a glass cannon. You had a bunch of really dope stuff at the end, you know, like, here and there, that when they hit, they would knock it out the park.
Mm-hmm.
But when it didn't hit, it was horrible. Horrible. Like, you can't go back. You can't point to anything that was, like, consistent. You know? Like, you had some
character. Mid-card.
I'd say mid-card, high-card, low-card. It doesn't matter. Any card. Like, okay. At the top, like, so there would be one or two programs that made sense,
yes.
Right? And then the rest of it's trash, right? So this is what I liken it to, right? When you listen to an album, we'll say there's 12 tracks on the album. Two tracks on those albums are bangers.
Yes.
But the other 10 are hot garbage? Is that a good album?
No.
No, it's not a good album. That is what the Attitude Era is.
That's a good point.
Like, the singles to that album were fucking fire. And you might have had one deep cut on the album, but everything else was filler trash. Like, you can, we, like, so many of the things from the Attitude Era, Trish Stratus versus Lita.
Oh, yes. No, we said we were going to talk about this. I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to segue into this now on Damien and Dio. The Dark Side of the Ring will take a back seat for a couple minutes. So we talked off air on Monday.
Yep.
About women's wrestling in general, because that's something that we're both passionate about. But when we're talking about rose-colored glasses, when we look at things in nostalgia viewpoints,
mm-hmm.
how when we see it years later, sometimes it doesn't age well, or the Mandela effect has now kicked in. You remember it being completely different than what it was.
It was, yeah.
One that comes to mind is Trish Stratus versus Lita on that episode of Raw.
Right. Let's see, let me double check to make sure that was in the Attitude Era.
And for those that don't know, who don't know really wrestling, who don't understand wrestling, Lita and Trish wound up main eventing a Monday Night Raw, which had not been done when women have not main evented a Monday Night Raw. So that was uncharted territory, but they were three of the most popular performers in the company at that point.
Right.
You know, you had Lita with Team Extreme, the Hardy Boys. You had Trish Stratus, who was the, I'm not going to say the original, but the most famous ballet turned wrestler to actually turn into a decent wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see, I was about to say something about Nikki Bella, but I'm going to be nice.
Well, whatever. Nikki Sauer is the best. Hey, I will. That's a hill that I'll die on. Nikki Bella is amazing.
She is. But when people say she is the best ballet turned women's wrestler, I think Trish is a little bit above her.
No. I'm going to disagree on that one.
Because if you watch Trish's 24, whatever thing that was on the network,
yeah,
she was already training to be a wrestler before WWF brought her in.
Yeah.
You know, I give Nikki Bella a whole lot of credit for not having any wrestling experience and then eventually being one of the mainstays in the women's division. As much as I was not a Bella Twins fan, mm-hmm, I appreciate the work that she put in, knowing that, crap, they're going to make me the center of attention. That wasn't a blonde, mind you, wasn't a blonde.
Right.
Talked on previous episodes.
So also a person of color.
So she was out of the norm. And yet, some people still don't like her.
Okay, so this was outside of the Attitude Era. So this has been like Ruthless Aggression Era. The beginning of the Ruthless Aggression Era was Attitude Era 2.0. So I kind of mix those in sometimes, but still. Hindsight 2020, of course, but even at the time, it wasn't that great. And I will, like I said, I disagree with you on Trish Stratus being better than Nikki Bella. I don't agree. I believe that Nikki Bella came from nothing to actually being a legitimately good performer. So that's why I give her more credit, because she literally came from like a model search to being, you know, a wrestler.
She didn't even want to go. It was her sister that went for the
exactly. Year.
She didn't want.
And Trish Stratus was already being trained to be a wrestler, and it took her longer. But of course, yes, Nikki Bella did get to wrestle more. So like it was one of those things. Like if you go back and watch it now, it does not hold up the way that people make it out to be, right?
Lita was not good in the ring, by the way.
No, Lita was never great in the ring. Like, she has one of the worst moonsaults in the history of pro wrestling. That is just because she's simply not athletic. Is what it is.
She did like, spots. That's it.
She did spots. That was it. Like, she was, back when she was with Esa Rios, you know, she could pull off a spot, and that was the issue. Like, you had somebody that was just spots but didn't have anything else going on for them. You know, is she a legend and all that stuff? Yes, she came in at a time and she changed, like, the fact that she made the whole thong above the jeans thing, mm-hmm, a thing. Like, yeah, that's a lot. You had cultural impact. But as far as like in the ring goes, no, she was never that good. Like I said, and most of that just came down to just not being athletic. And you have a lot of performers that are that way, that simply just are not athletic enough to, you know, have great matches. Because like if you talk to folks, people will swear up and down that this was like Dreamboat Savage. No.
Which I did not like.
I liked it in that it was something different. It was because at the time, like, you know, we very much like pro wrestling back then was five moves of doom essentially. And, you know, this was like, okay, this was like a high paced, choreographed, you know, it was a dance. It reminded me very much of like old kung fu flicks. You could tell that this thing had been rehearsed over and over and over and over again because it's so clean, right? So taking it back to Lita and Trish, like it's not that great to watch, right? Especially so if you take, you know, some of the modern women's classics, this doesn't hold up to it.
Oh, you referenced Bayley Sasha.
Yeah, the Bayley Sasha Iron Woman match is one of the best matches, period. Doesn't matter what sex. That is one of the best matches that we have seen. The psychology behind it. Like, that was when we saw, like, Sasha Banks in her, like, purest heel form. Like, that was like, oh, yeah, you have heat. But then that moved past, like, nuclear heat. That was like, okay.
Now kids cry is a good level of heat.
I was like, you are at, like, celestial being eradicating the earth, you know, levels of heat at that point. Because, like, that was amazing. So, but, like, take that away. Just in-ring performing-wise, they weren't all that great. And was it their fault? No. They didn't get the chance. Because we can blame this on Moolah.
She's still trash.
Still trash. And had Moolah not screwed over Wendi Richter like she did, we wouldn't be in this situation. But yeah, like it's okay to look back at stuff and be like, oh yeah, that was a milestone. But I'm never going to be like, oh yeah, this was an amazing thing, because it wasn't all that great as far as matches go.
Right.
You know, I don't, for me, when it comes to like diversity, I like diverse. I don't like diversity for the sake of diversity. I want actual diversity in things, right? It's just like, so like when I watch movies, especially movies that are black movies, right? I don't want just a, you know, paint by numbers, same stereotype of movie that we've had all the, no, I want a movie to be good, right? I don't want it to be good for a black movie, right? Like, I'd rather have the Moonlights as opposed to the, you know, Madea's whatever, you know? Like, I don't want it to be, oh yeah, it was good for a black, no. I want it to be an actual good movie. Actual
good movie, yeah.
A good movie. And that's what we have here. And I could have picked a better choice than a fucking Madea movie, but, you know, sorry. but yeah, matter of fact, I'll say Queen and Slim, which is a bad movie.
You've told me that it's a bad movie.
It's just, it was, how do I say it? Style over substance.
Okay.
And you can tell this was somebody that knew nothing about the South, is another thing.
Was it a period piece? Because I didn't watch it.
It was set in like the 90s.
Okay.
Something. So, yeah.
Think about that. The fact that we're saying the 90s is a period piece.
Right.
We getting old, bro.
Whatever, I'm getting seasoned.
Like some people who don't know how to make chicken. Seasoned.
Yeah.
Which leads me to my next point here on Damien and Dio, as well as Anchor.fm, of not seasoned. There is one particular tweet that got attention today.
Hey, let me get that.
Yeah, get it out. And it revolves, I don't know their Twitter handle, I think it's AEW couple.
Yeah. Fuck them.
We're talking about diversity for the sake of diversity on, you know, positive, and sometimes some people think they're an ally when they're being controversial and they just sound like a fool. And I know Eugene earlier tweeted about that earlier as well. They tweeted out a picture.
Yeah.
A picture of Private Party.
Private Party.
Mm-hmm. As well as the Street Profits.
Yep.
And Dio,
I'll read it specifically. Is there any more obvious copying creative than this? And it was, as you said, Private Party and Street Profits. And I was like, what?
They said they are a direct copy.
Right. How are they a copy? One, Street Profits had been around, what, 3-4 years at this point?
Angelo Dawkins has been around for 10 years.
Angelo Dawkins has been around. he has been around since Jim Crow laws for fucking eradicated. Like, Angelo Dawkins walked with Malcolm, like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King. He was on the bus with Rosa Parks. Like, fuck.
That's how long he was in NXT.
That's how long he's been in NXT, right? Like, he was part of Jesse Jackson's presidential campaign.
Goodness.
Like, the Street Profits have been around for a long, for a good amount of time at this
point. The Private Party had been around on the independent circuit for years.
Right.
They only got notoriety because, or more notoriety because of AEW.
Because of AEW, right. And the thing is, you have two completely different gimmicks. Like, not even, the only thing that's similar is a party. That's it. That's the only thing that links them, I guess, the party and they're black. And leading to the next tweet that they had after somebody said something, they were like, oh yeah, they are both young African-American wrestlers who drink and party. LOL. It's the same exact thing. The small nuances of club-based versus house party means nothing when at their base, they're the same team. They're not the same team, though.
They're not the same team.
That's the, like, so party, private party, you have two high flyers.
Mm-hmm.
When have we seen Angelo Dawkins fly anywhere?
He's not doing a 450.
Other than to and from an event across the country. Like, where have you seen that? Like, they're not, it's not the same thing. Like, it's not even close to being the same team. And like, so that's the other thing too. So this was very much falls into that, okay, you all look alike situation.
Right.
And it's like, well, even if you look, take their attire, Private Party dresses in, like, you know, custom suits and shit.
They're literally going to the club.
They're going to the club. This is very much club culture, which, if you know black culture, club culture, specifically in the area that they are from, that's a very specific culture. Street Profits. This is very much house party, you know, go there, turn up, like two completely different things. The personalities of the people in each group are completely different. Like,
and if you've heard them cut a promo,
there's
different.
nothing alike whatsoever. So, like, and they just, and they kept on fighting with people and be like, oh well, no, it's just, it's not the same. It's not the same thing. You don't do this to white dudes. You do not do this to white dudes. Like, you never see this comparison between two white dudes, right? The only group where I ever see this is when they say the Young Bucks are copies of the Hardy Boys, which, yeah, they are. Especially if you look at the Hardy Boys old school, before the ripped up, torn up.
Oh yeah, no, when they first debuted.
Yeah, when they had the plaid outfits, the Young Bucks absolutely took, and they had headbands. Come on, folks. Now, but you know, then when you look at other things, and then you have like people that were saying that, like, I saw another tweet in that thread where people were like, "Oh yeah, they're just a copy of Harlem Heat."
Bitch, what? Where?
Bitch, where?
Where are where? They a copy of Harlem Heat?
How are they a copy of Harlem Heat? Harlem Heat wore a party gimmick. What? Where
did we... I know where this is going, but I need to just ask the question. At what point did the comparison game of African-American wrestlers, that they're all alike... Where did the mindset just freaking happen? Where does that come from?
I mean, there is a little bit of, there is history for that, because you did have, I mean, especially when it comes to Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon only likes his black people to be a very certain way. And it wasn't until the last 4 or 5 years that that mold has been broken. Because you had people that were undeniable, right? Like, the New Day had to go out for themselves to create who they are now, right? Because had it been up to them, they would have just been like shucking and jiving. Like, Xavier Woods and R-Truth literally shucked and jived in the ring. And R-Truth had on a Confederate hat. Like,
I remember this.
Yes. Right. He had on a Confederate soldier's hat. Literally shucking and jiving in the goddamn ring, right? Like, you had like three categories for black people in the WWE, WWF, right? Maybe four. So you had Coco Beware. So you had the party guy, party dancey guy.
Yep. Right. With the Zoom pants, right.
Right. Then you had the hardened thug type character, Bad News Brown.
Yes.
Right?
Love Bad News Brown.
Awesome. Ghetto Blaster is one of the best goddamn moves ever. Then you had the African Savage. So you have the Kamalas. Then you had Saba Simba, who was
Tony Atlas.
We already knew. You can put Papa Shango in that African Savage kind of group as well. Mm-hmm. Supernatural African Savage. And then let's see, what was the other one? The Criminals. So Crime Time, like the just, it was all bad. So we had these stereotypes that you had to fall into. Xavier Woods, dancey guy when he got there. I think Viscera might have been the one exemption once he got further into his career, because when he first came in, he was rapping dancey guy.
Men on a mission, yeah.
Men on a mission, right? And then, so actually, no, there's a fifth category, the over sexualized black man, Viscera, Mark Henry.
I'm writing this down because this makes perfect sense.
So you only had those five, like, stereotypes, not even archetypes, straight up stereotypes.
Can you tell the audience what's the difference between a stereotype and an archetype?
So an archetype is like, so when you watch a movie, you know, you have the hero. That's an archetype. You know, maybe we'll say an anti-hero. That's also an archetype. Mm-hmm. The foil, you know, the brooding antagonist. Those are like, these are archetypes. Those are a type of character, right? A stereotype is when you take something that is for like a group of people and you use more often than not over-exaggerated features or personality traits or habits and things like that. Like, you know, it'd be like, you know, using like old racist stereotypes, since we're saying it here. Black people are lazy and like watermelon and chicken, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a stereotype. An archetype is a type of character, right? It is the type of character in a story. A stereotype is, has specific aspects to it, as opposed to it just being a type of character.
Yes.
And when it comes to black and black, Latino, Asian characters, hell, even Polynesian, because almost every single Polynesian character, like performer in the WWE, has been in the Savage head trainers. Hell, Roman Reigns, when he came in, when he was Bayake, he fell into that as well. Umaga.
Yokozuna was a Japanese sumo wrestler who wasn't Japanese.
And even before he was doing that, I think he had a Savage type, you know, gimmick as well. So like, you have this thing where like, so people of color in wrestling tend to have these stereotypical things, right? You know, we had Crime Time, we had, you know, even with like the Prime Time players, you know what I'm saying? Like, they were the dancey guys. Crime Time, where
the athlete guy
was like the athlete, but he was like
entitled athlete guy.
The entitled athlete, like he was, I guess he was like a new Sarah type, but he, that came like fucking, it took like 20 years to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, like we
Junkyard
didn't,
Dog,
and like JYD, like he was problematic for so many fucking ways. Like, when he was on the indies at the time, he was a badass that was just mauling people. Came to the WWE, he became the friendly black man that came to the ring with fucking chains around his neck.
Yeah, we don't see that as problematic now in retrospect.
Oh, it's very problematic. That's why you don't really see footage of him with chains when he come when they do Black History Month and they, you know, pay tribute to former black wrestlers. Yeah, that's why you don't see him in chains coming to the ring, because they knew they fucked up.
You know. Reminds me of the time when Harlem Heat was originally supposed to come out with the chains wrapped around their feet.
Mm-hmm.
Southern Prisoners back in the day with Colonel Rob Parker as manager.
Yep.
They got greenlit.
And they got greenlit. Yeah. Whole lot of racism in pro wrestling history. Mm-hmm. And not even like it's kind of racism. It's flat out racism. So, yeah, like it was with all of those things. Like we didn't have that. You know, we didn't have the ability to be a bunch of different things, right? Like when you look at what white wrestlers were able to do, white male wrestlers specifically were able to do, they literally ran the entire gamut. You had the badass, you had the badass, you know, anti-establishment, the anti-hero. You had Stone Cold Steve Austin. The loose cannon psychopath with Brian Pillman, which those two actually kind of like their gimmicks were so goddamn similar. You take then, you know, Lex Luger as Narcissist, what was the other shit that he was?
The American, All-American-American.
All-American-American Lex Luger with the fucking the elbow with the plate. The elbow. So it's like, hey, let me tell you something. Having a plate in your elbow ain't going to do shit for you. It's not going to do anything. It's really not going to help you whatsoever. Those plates are so thin, it's not going to do goddamn thing.
But it knocked out Yokozuna and
Knocked him outside the ring. Like, you had the Oddities. All white dudes in that. You had the Mounties. You had You had the Brooklyn Brawler. You had fucking Akeem, the African Dream. They literally played a white person could be a black man.
For all those who don't know, look up Akeem, the African Dream, which has been revealed to have been a parody of Dusty Rhodes. But they took the one-man gang and made him a dashiki-wearing jive brother, managed by Slick.
Yeah, and go look up Slick. Go look up Slick's promos when he is gobbling down fried chicken. Go look those promos up. Smacking his lips. Like, fuck Vince. Fuck Vince. Fuck everybody involved with those things back then. Like, it was so bad. And that's the thing. Like, that's the issue that I have. There were so many different types of characters. Fucking Mr. Perfect, Shawn Michaels, Psycho Sid, Razor Ramon.
Who wasn't even Spanish?
Right.
He wasn't like, even Latin.
You had all of these, the 1-2-3 kid, the fucking, like, you had all of these things, these various different
gimmicks
that you could do, right? But we couldn't have that. We were relegated to five.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else was permutations off of those, right? Yeah. Like, even looking at like Ahmed Johnson, he fit into that like unstoppable badass, you know, thuggish type character. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, you know, so like when I see this, I'm like, these people are nothing alike. Nothing alike. Like, you have two base things. You hear Party, and you hear, and even with the Street Profits, it's not even so much a Party gimmick as it is just like a hyping the crowd gimmick.
Yeah, it's a hype man gimmick.
It's more like a concert gimmick than anything else. Like
a college party.
Right. Like it doesn't feel. Yeah. So it's like when I see that and I'm like, what? You're just wrong. You are loud and wrong right now. And like, when you have so many black people and white people telling you you're wrong, and you're like, no, it's the same thing. No, it's not the same thing. It is literally not the same goddamn thing.
That is one of my biggest irritants, is when people double down despite the evidence proving otherwise.
Right.
And I just, I I just want to start strangling people at this point. Like, just do you not think? Look, I have been beating the drum of think before you tweet, think before you post. I've said it for years. I will say it until I'm 100. If there's still such a thing as Twitter or social media when I'm 100, stop just making generalized tweets and saying this is a hot take. I'm going to run with it.
Right.
I've seen people use the unpopular opinion veil when they want to make a point, but they're never, well, I'm not going to say they're never, they're rarely ever this generalized. It's more about a personality thing. It's never about, well, these two wrestlers, because they're black, they're the same thing.
Right.
They're not.
They're not.
They're not. We need to stop doing that. It reminds me of when, who was it? Remember when the Colognes, when they still go here and then they became bullfighters?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That took two Puerto Ricans and made them bullfighters?
Bullfighters. And it's like, there's no history. Like, I think there's like some small history of there being a bullfighting ring in Puerto Rico, but it's like a very, it's a deep cut thing. Like, I had to search far to try and fucking find that shit, right? So like, it was just like, oh yes, all Hispanic and Spanish culture is the same.
Tito Santana was a matador.
Right? So it was like, so you've only had a handful of actual Latino, Hispanic, Spanish, you know, characters, and you've already recycled that one a couple times already.
Yes. I think we need to put the matador bullfighters away.
Right. And it's like, this is, it doesn't even make sense in the 21st century to have these things. Like, because bullfighting is not going to be around in the next 50 years. It's going to go away.
Well, he'll still think it's good shit.
Oh, it's good shit. Because like, when you have a man that does not do anything outside of think about wrestling, you're only going to have that. This is a man that grew up in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Like, that racism is deeply ingrained in him at this point. And it shows in how he books, you know, people of color. You know, like, we had so many terrible Asian gimmicks in the WWE, WWF.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hell, fucking, had goddamn Quang wasn't even
the
Asian.
Puerto Rican Ninja? The
Puerto Rican Ninja.
Terrible, the Puerto Rican Ninja. What was it? They had Aldo Montoya, who was just incredible at some, you know, after that, mm-hmm. as the Portuguese Man of War.
Yeah.
With a jockstrap on his head.
What was it? Max Moon.
Mm-hmm. Was originally supposed to be Conan.
Right. But it was Mega Man. A bad Mega Man ripoff.
You literally had a dollar store Mega Man.
Oof.
You know, at least WCW with Glacier tried, you know?
Yeah. WCW, like, they saw something. They saw Mortal Kombat type. And they were like, you know what? We're going to try to capitalize on this. But, like, I don't care. Mortis was a dope-ass costume. I know people think it looks stupid. I don't care. It looked like Mortal Kombat to me. So I was mm-hmm. with it. Glacier just didn't have it. He wasn't cool. He was not that cool. Like, when we finally got him, and I'm like, oh, he just does a super...
It's just a super kick, yep.
It's a super kick. Or the cryonic kick.
The cryonic kick. Oh, my gosh. You know, wrestling gimmicks, you never fail to make me shake my head. Just gimmicks in general never fail to make me shake my head. We got hog farmers. We got dump truck drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Regal was a lumberjack real man at one point.
And mind you, we're just naming white people just right now, too, right? These are all white performers that in this varied amount of things that we had. Right.
They had varied gimmicks, exactly.
Just a whole spectrum.
When was the last time you saw a black lumberjack gimmick?
Never.
Exactly.
You had vampires. We had vampires.
They were white. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't get to see any of you, like, all these different things that we're talking about. You didn't get to see that type of stuff for wrestlers of color. Like, everything had to be a stereotype with us as opposed to an archetype. And even, like, if the stereotypes had some type of like weight to them or thought process, a story that made sense behind it, sure, that's you know, I can deal with that,
right?
But this stuff was just bad. So, like, taking it back to the whole point, like, when you have people that are like, oh yeah, these are the exact same gimmicks, and it's like, it's not the only, the only two things here are that they, it's a party gimmick and that they're black. That's like maybe 5% of the entirety of each team is those things.
Right.
Like, it's not even close to being the same. Like, and then factor in, you know, with Bianca Belair and stuff. Like, just seeing how each, how people react to things, how their characters work. And, like, look at Montez Ford. Like, there's nobody that has a personality like his.
Nope.
Like, I've even, like, even with Angelo Dawkins, like, I have grown to really like this personality, this character that he's come up with. Because it's like, yo, this is, you finally found something. You finally found something that differentiates you from just, you know, being blowing in the wind somewhere. But, like, for this to be like, oh, yeah, no, this is the exact same thing. How?
Yeah, it's getting to the point now where I think something you said earlier about people who aren't exposed to different cultures
as much
as their own, a lot of his ignorance or non-education on being around different cultures. I've made that mistake before about not knowing cultures, and I've done research after I've been told, hey, dude, check this out, and then you'll have a better understanding of it.
Right.
And that's hopefully what people can try to do in terms of, like, things they don't understand, or if they try to come across as if they know something to be certain, and yet they still don't understand or do their research. So for me personally, and I know when you saw it, again, I think about you whenever I see these things, and I just, all the GIFs we share in our group chat, just, yep, this ain't gonna work for Dio, and this ain't gonna work for me. But here we are talking about it in 2020, where two white podcasters are saying that two black tag teams
are exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
And when there's, like, literal worlds difference between the two of them, you know, it's just, and to double down, that was the worst part about it, is to double down.
Agreed.
And it's like, when you have, when people are giving you so much evidence against what you're saying, like, you just want to be wrong. That's what it is at this point, right? And I understand that, like, a lot of folks, if you have a podcast or whatever, you know, you're trying to get as many views as possible. Dude, fuck you. This is not, to you, it's just creating, you know, you're trying to stir things up. No, to us, this is our lives, actually. Because this goes beyond pro wrestling. This is how you have situations where people are like, oh yeah, like, all black people are criminals, right? You could have somebody, you could see a dude, you know, driving down the street in, like, an old school Cadillac with 22-inch rims, you know, with whatever the stereotypical rapper attire is. Then you could have me going to work. I am pulling behind me my videographer gear. I'm in shirt and tie. I'm bumping Daft Punk in my headphones. And you would have folks that look at us and be like, they're exactly the same. It's like, no, two different aspects, two different people, right? Like, and not to say that the other thing's bad or anything like that. It isn't. You know what I'm saying? It's just different. And we are different. We are not a monolith. That is the thing that so many other groups need to understand. We're not a monolith, just like you're not a monolith.
Right.
You know? And so for this, in this, like, think before you tweet, right? Understand that you are adding to the discourse as opposed to helping heal wounds that have existed in pro wrestling for long periods of time, right? Like, this is, you know, like, when it's like one of those things when I see, for instance, like with Nia Jax, it's a good thing, right? Does she botch every now and then? Yeah, she does. You know what I'm saying? Like, she is she stiff? Yeah, she is. Right. But when other white performers, especially performers that are of a smaller stature, that's another thing, you know, she is a bigger woman. And you have folks that just flat out don't like bigger women. So, like, you don't have that same energy when you have these other people doing
There's one in particular that springs to mind. I remember Charlotte wrestling Sasha at SummerSlam a few years back, and they tried to do a top rope powerbomb spot, and literally Charlotte just drops her.
And just dropped her, right. Nobody said anything about it. Didn't get nearly the amount, but let Nia like mess up one time. And people just jump on her. And the thing is, it's not just a fan base that does it. This is what I hate about pro wrestling, the pro wrestling Twitter bubble, or the blogosphere, if you will, right? Is that you will have site runners at sites that have thousands of users per day jumping on this to say, oh, this person's unsafe. But then when we point out that Finn Balor or all these other people have fucked other people up too. Oh, well, that's not the same. How is it not the same? How is it not the same? We all saw this happen. We all saw this person knock this person out. I've watched combat sports long enough to know when somebody gets flash knocked out. Like, it's not the same. You know, they never have the same energy when it is one of the chosen favorite, you know, Caucasoid performers. And it's sad. Like, this, and the thing is, I hate that I even have to point it out. It shouldn't be that way. Like, I should be able to just watch things and just enjoy them for what they are. But like, when you have this issue with the pitchforks coming out when it's wrestlers of color, but when a white wrestler does it, no big deal. That's when there's a problem. Just like how we have the issue with the young man that was murdered, was essentially lynched by two white men because they thought he looked like somebody that committed a crime. Mm-hmm. And those two people that killed him have not been charged yet, right? This is why this is an issue, because this adds to the larger discourse in America. It's not just, it's a pro wrestling issue right now, but it is a symptom of the larger issue at hand. Right. So,
and I know there are going to be people out there who are going to chime in and say, why are you two making this comparison between what happened in Georgia versus wrestling? We're just saying what happens out there also happens in the wrestling bubble. Mm-hmm. Just saying, racism happens when the wrestling bubble, just as racism happens outside of it. Murder happens in wrestling, just like outside of it.
Yep.
Those are the parallels.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, and that's one of the things too that like pro wrestling fans don't seem to get. So they tend to look at this as they've had to suspend disbelief for so long that they don't realize that this is still part of the world. This still affects the world, right? Like how I said earlier, how like Lita made having her thong be above her pants. That was a cultural thing. Like, you saw that shit every fucking where. Mm-hmm. That became an actual thing.
Became an actionable thing.
Like, so she actually affected, you know, the cultural zeitgeist at a very high level. So it's like, everything's connected. It's all connected. Just because it happens in pro wrestling does not mean that it doesn't affect out in the real world, because pro wrestling happens within the real world.
Well, think about it in terms of programming with Law and Order of SVU, and it always says ripped from the headlines, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, and when you look at like police procedurals, as much as I love them, have been used to demonize people of color for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. Long, long periods of time. Because, like, go back and watch Law and Order in the 90s.
Ooh, when it first came out. Early
90s, when it first came out.
Yes.
Literally every episode, the criminal was black or brown. Mm-hmm. Almost every single episode. So it's like, so when you have people seeing this, and then when you see on the news, especially on the news, because this isn't like we're just saying stuff, but no, you can actually go and look up the statistics. People of color, when they commit crimes, there is more coverage on them by a large margin than when white people do.
Right.
That's a fact. That's not me making things up or anything like that. No, that's a fact. So when you constantly have marginalized, oppressed peoples being shown as the bad guy, of course people are going to get used to that. That's why in pro wrestling, why we have so many of these bullshit stereotyped gimmicks that we had. So,
well, we always say that wrestling is a carny business, and this is evidence of that, because the carny mindset is make a profit, make a buck. And in carnivals you have performers, the strong man, the bearded lady,
the sword swallower,
the small person acting as if like the ringleader or the ringmaster of the circus,
the savage,
So wrestling in general comes from the carnival lifestyle. So for us to defend the fact that no two black wrestlers or two black tag teams are exactly alike, no, you're just saying they fit a particular gimmick because they're black, not that the gimmicks are the same.
Exactly.
Because I could have the Young Bucks, like you said earlier, we can have the Young Bucks on one end, we'll go in the time machine and say the Hardys and the Rockers. Mm-hmm. Little different wrinkles.
Right.
But no one say they're the same.
Exactly. Exactly. Like nobody is saying, you know, like even look, especially like in the 80s, like you had the Rockers, you had the Heartbreak Express, you had all these teams. Like
the Heart Foundation.
The Heart Foundation that were like basically all the same.
Same.
They were all the same, basically, but nobody says that they were different, that they were the same.
And again, I know that people wanting to, like you said, they're not doing the discourse in the right way. They're doing it just to be divisive as opposed to conversational and to be educated. And sadly, that is what happens in professional wrestling and fandom in general. Mm-hmm. When you and I talk about the faves and thou shalt not go against your fave. Mm-hmm. And in the title of this couple, they're called the AEW couple. So, right.
So of course, it's going to be biased towards AEW.
Yes.
And like, it speaks to something that I've, for a long time, like from the beginning, before AEW was AEW, back when it was just, when they were doing All or Nothing. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even have the AEW name yet.
Right.
Like, so we'll take this back to, because, you know, back when we were doing podcast shams and, you know, High Mark, like the Bullet Club fandom, right? Been problematic for a long time.
Quite.
Right? The only members of it were white for a long time. Like the leader always had to be a gaijin, always had to be white, right? And then they literally, then they added people of color to it, specifically Polynesian people. And then they split it to where it was the white guys versus the brown guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's an issue. That's a very bad issue. Also, the fan base. The fan base was wildly racist, wildly homophobic, wildly transphobic, just bigoted as hell, right? Which carried over to AEW. I remember back when they first were doing like the signing thing with AEW, and when Sunny Kiss was announced and Nyla Rose, how they were just outright just bigoted in the Facebook comments, in the YouTube comments, on Twitter, and AEW, like the people up at the top, said nothing about it. Like they did Cody did the lip service thing, like he had that great, at this point I'm gonna call it a promo because I don't fucking believe the shit that he had about how when he talked to Brandy and Brandy was like, well, you don't, if you say you don't see color, then you don't see my struggle. That now, seeing how they've interacted with this stuff, you know, how they handle the things, to me, I don't believe it. I don't believe the stuff, because the actions do not match what's being said. And that's an issue that I've had with AEW. Like, look, WWE has a wrought history of racism and ignoring things for a long time, 30, 40 years at this point, right? With AEW, they shouldn't have that. You're supposed to be like the new generation, you know, the 21st century company that is going to move past the bullshit that we had to deal with before, but you haven't addressed these things.
Nope.
Like, you haven't addressed, like, with Nyla Rose, how people have been so just outright transphobic about her. And you still haven't said anything about it. I mean, then again, when you look at Tony Khan and his father and who they are,
yep,
kind of tells you, exactly where they are.
And so. I think that's the best time for us to get out of here for this episode of Damon and Dio talking Dark Side of the Ring as well as professional wrestling landscape on a Wednesday, May 6th. Find me on Twitter at DamonG347, Dio at I'm Just DEO on both Twitter and Instagram. Big thumbs up to everybody who tuned in via YouTube. I will be posting this on anchor.fm since it's a big picture wrestling topic. I will post this for podcast format. And as always, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Without you, there is no us.
Yes.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Wash your ass. And if you want some good alcohol, Rancho La Gloria margarita wine cocktails are fucking amazing. If you have a Kroger near you, they are on sale for $8.99, I believe, at the right now for the 750 milliliter. Look, I'm trying to get this sponsor, but yeah, like this was, you know, floating around on Twitter. You know, my girlfriend was like, yo, we should try this out, so I found it. It's delicious.
Guess I'm gonna have to take a trip to Kroger. Who got that? Because I got a whole fridge full of wine that I'm tired of drinking. So wash your hands, wash your ass, be safe, practice social distancing. And on Friday, when we do Friday's episode, I'll have a full week of seeing people not socially distancing where I live, where I'm the only one wearing a gosh darn mask, bro, when I walk around, but yet no one is 6 feet tall, 6 feet away from each other. And there are restaurants where people are way too damn close to one another. But I'll save that for Friday. Thank you so much. Damon and Dio, we'll talk to you soon.